clock says we have time. My watch says it is time. The bell hasn't rung yet. So anyway, we are on our, today is kind of, it really ends up being a lot about the Philistines, because there's some things I think we want to understand about the Philistines, and a little bit about Samson and David. You know, as we've worked our way through the journey here, you know, when we looked at Abraham, I think, you know, one of the things hopefully that kind of came out from what I was talking about is that we looked at the wealth and just the sophistication of the city of Ur, and so that he came out of Ur. They're gossiping. Okay, so when we looked at Abraham, we also looked kind of at Ur and the wealth. I mean, some of the most spectacular things are a few hundred years earlier than Abraham, but still, it was like the place to be. And he left there, right? First they went with Terah, they went to Haran, and then Abraham was called into that land. But he came out of that. And so here was very much a very physical, wealthy city. But from Abraham, we learned that lesson, that power of faith, that he was looking for a city not seen. And so that, to me, that archaeology of Ur shows us just what really was given up, how much he was looking for that city not seen. Because if he was just looking at where he was, why leave? Yet, within his lifetime, that was all going to be gone. But he left at least a good number of years before that. You know, we looked at, let's see where we are, Joshua and the conquest. And of course, we look at Jericho and we see, you know, we think of walls, right? We see these illustrations, we have these stories as kids, and what those illustrations show is not at all really what that city was. It's when you look at archaeology, those double walls, that 12-foot retaining wall before you even got to the city wall. And imagine there, Joshua and the Israelites looking at that city wall, and what does God say? You know, do you lay siege? Do you do some special attack? No. Walk around the city. And, you know, really, you know, you look at those commands. And so it really, the author there in Hebrews, by faith, you know, it's Joshua and the Israelites. Those Israelites, just think how much faith it took as they were walking around this just tremendous city, walled city. And then those walls came tumbling down. You know, we stopped at Shechem, and yes.
Yeah, I had the wrong idea about the wall. It tumbled. I thought everywhere was thundering. When you told me that.
Based on the archaeology, now good sections of it fell, but not all of the wall fell. But yeah, you read it, and that's what you kind of think, because that, you know, that's what your mind eye and all, but. The thing is, it's good that it was a double wall and all of that, because again, you had to go 12 feet before you even got to that first wall.
Even according to the scripture, at least one section didn't fall, because that's
where Rahab was. Good point, Sewell. So you have that, and then with Shechem, you know, it's like, where's the first place that Abraham comes? Where does Jacob come back? When it comes from Haran, it's there at Shechem. And the fact that when they were called further into the land, the covenant given, that those idols, that way of the other things around the world, they were buried and kept there at Shechem, and then they went on. So, and then the woman at that well, that she's saying, where should we worship? So Shechem, very much this point of worship. Where shall we worship? Shall we worship, you know, Mount Gerizim with all the Samaritan traditions? Should we worship with idols from the cases of our patriarchs? No. Serve Lord. And I don't know that you can say cap that kind of whole lesson, because, I mean, we've got Jesus, and it's hard to trump Jesus. But, you know, it is that powerful statement of Joshua, right? Choose who you're going to serve. But for my family, we're serving the Lord. And so you don't think of Shechem as this place, as this decision point, as this turning point of who we're going to worship, how we're going to worship. But we look at these cases, these different events, and again, you just wonder, how in the world do you plaster, you know, how do you put the laws up in the stone? Were they engraved or whatever? And again, archaeology has given us insight to that. So today we have, we look at Samson and David's interaction. We start back at the patriarchs, because we got to understand the Philistines a little bit. But we look here, and again, two men of faith, right? Samson and David. And again, we let archaeology kind of help us some to understand that. So it looks like we've got pretty much everybody. So first of all, if you're going to LaGrange and you haven't given me a form or anything, or let me get a head count, please try to do that today. You know, Wednesday really would help. It's not the end of the world if you show up, but I really need a pretty good head count on Friday. So, and also we're going to need to leave 9-ish, not 9:30. So gather here at 8:30 if you're wanting to carpool, and we'll leave about 9. Also, for, I think we got some visitors, but in general, we're doing these late night, or not late night, 5 p.m. I was up late, so. Okay. Teresa there, Teresa.
Thank you.
All
right.
Thank you. So, anyway, tonight, 5 p.m., we are doing top finds and where they're located, okay? So it'll be kind of a review in one sense, but we're going to kind of look at and talk about really what different people think are some, like, important finds in the Bible. So that's tonight at 5, and this is a bonus class. So, you know, hey, bonus, that's great, right? Okay, so today's lesson, again, you know, because we're really going a lot of different time frames, we always try to start the class right to get you in mind of time frames. So we're going to start looking at the patriarchs. We're kind of actually, we'll skip over the conquest that, but the judges and then the United Kingdom is where we're going to look today. And really, yeah, the patriarchs, yeah, judges and the United Kingdom is where we're looking today. As far as the judges and the United Kingdom, we've made it to the Iron Age, folks. Okay? We've been generally Bronze Age. Or middle Bronze Age, well, Bronze Age, middle and late. So today, we've made it to the Iron Age. And so they're kind of the time period that we're looking at. And location is this land of the Philistines. Oh, yeah, sorry. I had battery power. So we had this land of the Philistines. There's those 5 cities, right? We always talk about and associate with the Philistines. Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, and Gath. Now, they controlled more than five cities, but those are the five cities that we kind of associate with the Philistines. So here we are, we're talking about Abraham and the Philistines at Gir. So, hold on a second. Here's Gir, all right? Gira. We never associate Gira with the Philistines when we're kind of talking about Samson and David. But here we are talking about Abraham and Isaac and their interaction with King Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And so we look and say, okay, there it says, land of the Philistines, as far as with Abraham. And Abimelech is kind of also another name for king. So it kind of shows up. It's kind of, I guess it's like, the popes take a new name or something. So it's sort of like if you're
king. Is that
like
Pharaoh?
It's kind of like Pharaoh. Hazael. So I don't know if they did so much a name change, but generally there were certain names associated with a king.
Like Pharaoh.
Yeah. Okay? So, because you get kind of confused because you've got David dealing with Abimelech, at a later time.
Literally, it means my father is the king. Okay. Some people think it's a kind of a name way of claiming a dynasty, even if you don't have one. You can say, my father was the king too, even if he wasn't.
Wasn't there King Hazael in like first or second Kings?
Yeah. Hazael is that same kind of connotation. It's commonly used in the king. And it's kind of, as Mason pointed out very well, his Hebrew is better than mine.
That was the name.
Well, you generally think that, but what we're kind of saying is when you see Hazael, Abimelech, realize that also is kind of more connotation like with Abimelech, my father is the king. So Hazael, I'm not sure what the Hebrew is, but again, Hazael, because you see that name a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's like, even the British royalty, they've got like 20 names, but there's a certain name that they use that, as king or queen. They'll take their 20 names that's in their name and choose one, and they're king or queen, whatever.
And there are a lot of them that have, like, George the Fifth, the Sixth, and Edward the Seventh.
Yeah.
Hazael means king of what?
Huh? I don't know Hazael. I don't know the Hebrew meaning on Hazael. But it is similar to Abimelech. It is a name associated with king. Okay? So that's kind of what we're doing in this class. Because you read that and you associate that as a personal name. But what we're saying is, no, you look at the meaning of the name and you look at the history, you look at the archaeology, and you say, no, that's kind of a name, a dynasty name, a name associated with the ruler of a place. Not a personal name necessarily. Okay? All right. So we look at this term, okay, we're in Genesis, okay, Genesis 21, and there, land of the Philistines. This is about 2060, give or take decades, possibly. But when we think of the land, the Philistines, those five cities that we think of, okay, and that we associate, when we see land of Philistines, we think of those five cities. That's like after 1177 BC, okay? The Philistines sort of were going to take over Egypt. They had their families, they had everybody. They came in, they took out the Hittite Empire, and they were on their way to take out the Egyptian Empire, okay? That occurred, Ramses III, and that was kind of... After that battle, after his death, 1170, 1180, you'll see all sorts of dates. But anyway, after that time period, they move in and take over those five cities. and really that whole region. Okay, so we have a problem, right? Here we have the term Land of the Philistines, 1177, and we have 2060. There's some time difference there. Okay, so what happened? Well, give me a little bit. We've got a question there, right? Let's see if the next slide helps. Well, actually, it tends to get us in more trouble. Because we come to, you know, here, it doesn't say Abimelech, king of the, well, and actually it does say king of the Philistines there. Okay, sorry, almost got a prodigal instance in there. So anyway, even really not saying land of the Philistines, here it's very king of the Philistines. Okay, and here we're about 100 years after that, that we occur. So we've got Abimelech and Isaac fighting over wells. So there's a famine. He comes in to here. He comes to Gerar. And then they're fighting over the wells. And he slowly goes to Beersheba. Which if you look, I mean, again, it's pretty small land. But still, there's some distance there. Okay, so he's been pushed by the folks of that area. So, and that's, again, so here we have king of the Philistines. We have land of the Philistines. So critics will say, aha, this is anachronism, or again, another example of people in like the 400 BCs making up stuff about happened at 2000. That's generally the argument. They will look at this and say, aha, because they will say, land of Philistines, five Philistine cities, bam, that's it. Well, you know, that term land of Philistines is, again, in our minds, we do associate that. So one question you have to ask yourself, well, do we have any records of the Philistines kind of bebopping around before 1177? Okay, good question, right? We should ask. So what we have, here's kind of, I tried to show this in the lesson, this term used here, were kind of the 2100, 1700, okay, that kind of time period. Well, you go to this obelisk, the Egyptians liked obelisk, up in Lebanon, Syria, and it mentions the Leuka. We think Philistines, but the sea people were a whole bunch of different people, okay? And the Philistines were just one, and they had the best hat. So that's the one we always think of. And then also, I think they were a dominant people who settled there in those five cities. So first of all, they're active, okay? They're active in that area. So what you have, and along this whole region here, when we look at this kind of plains area, this is where the Egyptians were active, and they hired mercenaries. In fact, they hired Philistines as mercenaries. That's one of the records that we have. And so, most likely, and again, not the five cities. So, definitely, it's not an anachronism to have the Philistines in the land at the same time as Abraham and Isaac. Okay? Because we have this evidence. And then, okay, that's where we start. Then we just keep going. You know, here down to here, we have the Philistines active in the land of Palestine in the Levant. Okay? And in fact, they were part of Ramses II, part of his mercenary troops that fought at the big Battle of Kadesh, where he says, I did a great victory. Although, if you kind of read things, it looks like he got away by the hair of his teeth. And then also mentioned here, actually, Pharaoh Amenhotep beating them up. So, again, they are active in this area, okay? And so, yes, when we think of the term land of the Philistines, we think of the five cities, and we realize that is after 1170 BC. But Philistines are active in the region at the time of Abraham and Isaac. So, did the Philistines, were they present enough that even though it wasn't the five cities, that it was involved? Again, I don't know that we have clear proof, but there are a couple of cases where we kind of, it seems like a little bit later, that as far as geography, someone was trying to help out the geography. But as far as saying, no, there were no Philistines there, that is incorrect. Okay, so Moses, writing around 1440 BC, right? Battle of Kadesh, 1275. Again, Philistines are all kind of here. But where we really hear about the Philistines, this oppression, right? In the days of Samuel, in the days of Samson, in the days of Saul, in the days of David. But the days of the judges, where we hear about the Philistines oppressing, okay, that's here around the 1100 BC period, okay? And they come in at 1175. So the Bible is indeed accurate as far as in describing this oppression, because that's the way, I mean, the Philistines, when they came in 1170, they were really there to stay, to take over the lands, and they really were causing grief. And we think about it, I mean, the other thing, I mean, kind of interesting, I mean, we have in one sense this faith, right, of Samson, of David. We see the failure of Saul, that he was going to go fight the Philistines. The people weren't, you know, Samuel wasn't showing up, so he does the sacrifice. But we also see the people. Why did the people want a king? Because the Philistines were beating them up. Okay? So they wanted to be like the Philistines. And so, you know, again, powerful lessons that we get. I mean, it's one of the reasons, I mean, the Old Testament is so useful to us, because of the lessons that it gives. And what archaeology will do is give you, again, that enhancement of what's going on there. Okay. So, anyway, the Philistines, and they recently, I don't know if any of you, you know, keep an eye on archaeological news, but there was this recent one where they did some DNA studies of the folks there, and indeed, in the ones that were the older ones, the way the article is, you know, it's like almost the bodies that they found, like maybe their grandfathers were the ones that came in to the land, was Southern Europe. The Bible says they came from Crete, Cadafor, but anyway, the DNA studies sort of say, yeah, it came, they originated there. But what happens, because they stay there to like the 600s, it's Babylon comes in, wreaks havoc on them, and then kind of after that, you don't really hear so much of the Philistines. But by that time period, you could not tell the difference between the Canaanite and the Philistine. They intermingled. But when they came in originally, the DNA showed them as coming from this region.
So if yes. I'm jumping ahead, I apologize. You can stop me from stealing your thunder, but... So this idea that they came from Greece or colonies of Greece helps to make sense of some of the biblical accounts, including the contest of champions between David and Goliath. That's a very Greek thing if you read the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yes.
That's totally typical.
Yeah.
You will pick two representatives, they'll fight, and whoever wins, that substitutes for the battle.
Yeah.
Suddenly that contest of champions, which is culturally out of context in Palestine, makes sense. If you're dealing with people from Greece.
Yes, that's very good. No, I'm not even, I wasn't going to even reach that point, so you added to the class there. That is, but again, the Iliad, we all, sometime or other, had to go through that in high school or whatever. But again, that choosing the champions, and that's very much the David and Goliath thing. This is the one I happened to grab, but there are quite a few others, but like, this is from Ashkelon, and this is pottery from Cyprus. And again, there's some very kind of similarities there. There's even, I mean, first of all, the Philistine are pottery. I mean, if you were going to choose pottery between buying an Israelite pot or buying a Philistine, I mean, the Philistine pots looked a lot better. They're mentioned in Genesis, Jeremiah, and Amos, this reference as being from Kafetor or Crete would be the term that we're used to here. So, but this has like been in the last month or so that this DNA thing. Did anyone see that? Does anyone follow archaeology enough? Okay. To follow that. Okay. This is from the temple down in Egypt. They kind of colorized it, but this is the big battle that Ramses II had. Again, they kind of came in, all these boats, and the Egyptians kind of, I mean, again, the Philistines, the sea people, were very much into hats. And so if you look at all these different pictures, you'll see a lot of different hats. One of the it was the Sheridans, and they had these little horns. So again, all of this is from Egyptian monuments that the sea people, the Sheridan, which is part of what, you know, this Philistine folks or the folks coming in, so they wore kind of horn helmets. And there's an artist rendition of some of the different forms. And again, this is taking these images here and an artist going to town. So this is that Battle of Kadesh where Ramses II was going at it. And again, 1274 there. This is kind of more from that time period closer to Ramses III and showing Aluka, a Turush, and an Ikwish sea people. So again, they really like different hats. The hat, though, that's most famous to us is this one, okay? All right, again, I don't know how much y'all look at pictures of ancient history and stuff.
Ancient hats.
that guys wore, not women, guys. the Philistines would do kind of this round thing, and they would have feathers like this. And so actually, this is one that was dug up as far as this band here from 1200 BC, which to me is pretty incredible. They would have the feather hats and stuff there. And actually, to get that effect is pretty hard. I almost put in that there was this book called The Bible Alive where these people try to recreate Bible scenes. And I will tell you, their feathers looked pretty sad. So it just gave you a feel for how hard it was to get that really nice feather effect there. So for those who worry about hats. But anyway, this is sort of what we associate with the Philistines. So when we think of the land of the Philistines, it is a locator, right? So we hear that term, we think of a location. So again, how it's being used in with Abraham is location, but also though you get thrown right in there, the people, right? But actually, in Genesis, they're not in those five cities. They're in Gera, okay? They are an enemy. And then again, frequent mention of this Pentapolis. Final collapse came 604 when Babylon came in. They pretty much ended most of that with the Philistines. The other thing that we associate with the Philistine is iron tools. So we're coming in. We're in this, you know, in the Iron Age. And, you know, it wasn't that iron weapons didn't exist before. It's just the processing for them to be common wasn't there. We're talked about there was no smith to be found in the land of Israel, for the Philistines had said the Hebrews might make swords or spears. they had to go down to the Philistines to sharpen their tools and stuff. And I, I apologize, we're running a little bit out of time on this, but there's a term in there for a pimp, and people didn't really know what that was until archaeology, and it was a weight. So it was a weight of how much, you know, they had to pay to have their weapons sharpened there. But again, it's, you know, we have there that only Saul and Jonathan had, had sworded weapons. So we then kind of come to this example of Samson. So we're here, the Pentapolis is all going, and the Philistines are oppressing, and Samson, Lord raises him up, and Samson just causes them grief there. But his final action is in this temple, right? We always, this is a story we love to tell the kids, that he's between the pillars, he pushes the pillars, and the temple falls down, and he kills more Philistines in that one setting than he did all before. So we have that image, right? So, you know, does archaeology, you know, first of all, what do you think you would expect to find based on this description? You expect to find pillars, right? And you would expect to find pillars such that if I push those pillars, the temple would come tumbling down. That's kind of what I expect to find. And they have found that. They haven't found the temple where this occurred, but they have found this design. So first of all, realize that with Samson, you're in this valley of Sorek. All right, we're going to maybe do a geography class later in the next class session, our year plan. But realize that you had the plains, right? And you have Jerusalem and all of that where the Israelites were. They're up in the hill country. Well, the way you get up to the hill country are through these valleys. All right? So we see with David and with Samson this geography of the valley. But with Samson, it's this valley of Sorek. All right? There's his hometown. Timnah, closer to that plains, is where he does his first wife. We're told that Delilah was from the valley of Sorek. So it all is kind of associated or central around there. We have Ekron close by. Ashkelon is further out. So, but here is that valley. Now, you might look and say, that's a valley? It's a big valley? Well, anyway, but no, it is a valley. And then that runs, so that's a road. Take your chariots and walk, and you can go up to the hill country. So there's Zorah on that tip of that hill. Here's another map, kind of trying to show the coastal plains. And so there's the Ashkelon, and then there's the Sorek Valley, see? And that's the reason this is a pretty good set of maps, because it really, this particular map does a good job of showing that. The plains, where I can have my chariots and all, I go up into the valley, and I get into the hill country where chariots are useless there. But all of that is occurring along that valley. And then he really goes a long way to kill those guys in Ashkelon. He comes all the way down to here.
Wasn't Delilah a Philistine woman?
Yeah. He had a problem with Philistine women. He really liked Philistine women. His first wife was Delilah. Yeah, that is correct. So the one thing to remember is the Lord's kind of was looking occasion. So he kind of took Samson's liking Philistine women as an occasion to really kind of cause stir up and to cause the Philistines grief, because the Philistines generally always came out on the short end when he was dealing with the Philistine women. But I felt for his parents. So here again is that Sorek Valley. See, again, it's a nice map because it shows the arrows kind of 3D. But it doesn't really give you that full impact of the valley. So there's Ashkelon down here. So that's where he gets the clothes that are required for the first wedding. So what you end up with is, when we look kind of at our map here, is that Samson is along the Surek Valley. But when we come to David, he's along the Eli Valley. So again, these are valleys you normally don't think about, right? But in kind of in understanding them is helpful. Now here's an interesting thing. They've really been doing a lot of digging in this area, especially at Gath, is that there's time, right, that separates from when Samson was and when David was. You know, not hundreds of years, but over 100 years. Well, guess what? In the days of Samson, Ekron was the important Philistine center. So where Samson was active is where the Philistines were the strongest. All right? Where David is down here in Eli, Gath is the stronghold of the cities. So this is really tonight's lesson I'm kind of get at is that when you look at all the artifacts, when you look at the things on the ground, when you look at the physical things, there's confirmation of what you read in the Bible. Now, they'll work their way down. You get into some of these nitty-gritty things where really you got to understand is like they're interpreting based on a very small percentage of stuff, or they have limited themselves into what they're willing to look at, and so that you get into all of this kind of, oh, the Bible's wrong, Bible's wrong. But when you just look at the kind of the basic thing, you know, you realize the things about Samson and him being in that, the reason I've gone on about the Sarek Valley is this slide here. That's where the Philistines at that time were really dominant, really kind of powerful. And we look at David. Archaeology, digging stuff out of the ground. Yeah, you know, Gath really makes a swing to being the more powerful of the cities in that time of David. And so the story switches. So we're just kind of thinking, oh, the story occurs there. But realize there are things going on in the physical world that kind of say, this is the reason the story has switched locations, is at a different scene. All right. So this isn't the temple, but this is one from right around the time of Samson. And what you notice there, this is the temple, and what do they have? Two pillars. Someone knocks those pillars down, there's some rooftops getting ready to come down. All right, here's an artist kind of doing his best, showing the Philistines hanging out there. Again, those pillars go, that temple's going to go. So, you know, to say, you know, wow, you know, yeah, the Philistines built their temples and their things such that they would have a couple of pillars that would pop and you could bring it all down. I think they also tended to use, kind of had holes in their roofs for smoke to get out, which this drawing doesn't show, but then it explains why people would be on the roof. They could look down and everything. Okay, this is one from the 7th century, and they gotten smart, right? This one's Samson proof for death. They have pillars, but they have more of them. So, but even, you know, if you were this kind of design, you know, maybe a larger temple building, popping a couple of those could really cause grief on the structure. So, you know, we see there, we read about that occurring, and we then look at archaeological, and yeah, okay. You know, it's an interesting exercise to get 3,000, but they were smaller people, all of that, and stuff, so. If I had an accurate or a good feel for what the actual size of the temple was Samson would have taken, I would have done the head count. I was actually kind of going through the process there. So, all right, we're going to kind of skip on to David. Okay, so here's David. So he's in the Eli Valley, okay? Samson, the Sarek Valley, David, the Eli Valley. And so this is kind of where he is. And then this, where this, where we're working at ways for this arch, right along in this area here, is where he had his big conflict with the lion. And there, again, it's kind of showing. This is realized that even before David in the time of Samuel, that the Philistines won a big battle here. And, you know, the Ark of the Covenant was there, and that whole story there. They come up and they destroy Shiloh at this time. And the archaeology digs at Shiloh show that about this time period there was a destruction. So here's the Eli Valley. Here's Succoth. And so it is in this region here, somewhere along this creek bed. So here's Saul's camp. And then over here, the Philistines' camp is here. And then they flee, trying to get back out to the plains from there. Again, this is where the forest, the fortress, Kirbet Kufa, or Kufia, or whatever, is located. And so, again, this Kirbet means it's not strata, it's not a tell. That, yeah, there was several periods of activity there, but basically this structure here is from the days kind of David, pretty much. And if you give, you know, you have this big conflict, you have all of this, there's a very good chance that the whole conflict with Goliath and them was somewhere along here, and that after that battle, this fort was built. So here's just realizing Goliath, the weight, and again, most of his armor was bronze, but his spear was that head of iron, kind of his height. So this is that creek bed where they met. He used a sling. And we kind of think of slings as kind of something kind of really small, right? A pebble almost, or we almost think a pebble. This is the size of the stone. It's a baseball, okay, and a rock. And this was actually found at the fort there. So that is what you should think of. Think of a baseball in a sling, but it's not as light as a baseball. It is a heavy stone. And like I say, you go down in the creek bed, you find these. So when it talks about David going down, finding these, this is, I mean, that's what's there in that creek. So again, the geography is right. So here's the fortification looking out on that fertile plain there. And we'll get into this on Wednesday night lesson, but there's this whole thing about the minimalist saying, oh, David, Solomon, myths. Okay? They even go so far as to say the kingdom of Israel, the northern kingdom, was founded, and then the Judah kingdom was founded. They won't even say they were ever united, and that the northern kingdom existed before. Again, you reach that conclusion based on basically saying, I have no faith in the Bible, and I take none of it. But anyway, this fortification, we talked about the four-room house and how much tons of material had to come in. To build a fortification like this took an organization, right? People had to come in. They had to build these. And now, this is artist rendition. There was this large complex. The houses were built into the walls. Also, here's the gate. It's not the six-chambered gate that we associate with Solomon. It's only a four-chamber. But this is that, you know, meeting at the gate. This was kind of the gate area here. And so this was this wall. It was a double casement. So the houses would kind of use it as a storeroom or use that. But then there's that four gates. So again, pretty significant structure there. Tremendous number of iron weapons were found there and some bronze, showing that it had a military purpose. People basically said that David's folks didn't know how to ride, all of these sort of things, but yet this pottery is found, and they've now also found pottery in Jerusalem again, what they would do writing on it. And I know it was interesting, the first interpretation or reading of this, it's pretty hard to read, sort of sounded like the king was concerned about widows. Now, I know there's been a second translation attempt that kind of makes it more of a dull kind of list of items. But again, what they would do is they would write on these pots, either to send a quick message, but generally would be written to get the grammar and everything right, the wording right, before putting it into clay or onto papyrus, which was more expensive. Yes?
And back to your prior slide, what does the four-chamber gate mean, that there were four doors to go through?
Well, no. What it was is that, I mean, you would go through the center part, but that there would be guards, there would be storage, so they could keep weapons here, supplies here. They would keep, generally it's like in those gates, when we move all the way to the last days of Jerusalem before Nebuchadnezzar comes in, at the gates they find notes, hey, I can't see the signal fires from this city. So the leaders of the soldiers would kind of be at this point also. Now this appears to be more fort than anything, but it's at the gate that you have judgment. Like it says, Lot was at the gate. It talks about Absalom at the gate when people would come, when he was kind of stirring up rebellion. So a lot of the government, the ruling, the interacting with the people would occur at the gate. But Solomon, in the cities that it says, Solomon fortified these cities. There are six chambers. But in this one, there's only four. So we would associate, in other words, Solomon had a lot more wealth. He had enough money to build two more chambers. And they were a lot bigger. We'll kind of talk about that some on Wednesday. We'll really get into Solomon's gates. And they're, you look at size, they're pretty good size. So, and these are kind of, these are large stones. So they're kind of small, but they're still pretty good size. All right, so remember, if you're going, if you haven't told me you're going, come up, get signed up. We're going to have to meet at 8:30, leave before 9 on Saturday, and be here at 5 p.m. to talk about museums and the treasures that they hold of the Bible. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
So there were giants in the Philistine tribe.